boys you got here just in the nick of time. What does that make us?
Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?
Hey, barkeep, whose leg do you have to hump to get a dry martini around here?
Oh, right! To call you stupid would be an insult to stupid people!
Hello, hello, and welcome to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, a film and TV radio talk show where a bunch of film enthusiasts shoot the breeze about various films and television shows that they like. I am your host, Marcus E. Acko, and the movie I would like to have scrubbed from my memory is X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I'm Laura Sampson, and the movie that I would like erased from my memory is a particular scene in the film Salo, directed by Pasolini. It's a dinner party scene, but the food has something special about it, that's all I can say.
And with us today, film producer from Vinny Vidi Films. Tell us your name and what movie you'd like scrubbed from your memory.
Hi, it's Edward Didi, and the film I'd like to be scrubbed from my memory is Man of Steel. Unfortunately,
Man of Steel, it wasn't that bad.
Maybe because I just think of the plot and just things that just did not make sense for me, and too much of
it was
Henry Cavill roaring.
It was his
I've
beard,
never
wasn't
seen,
it? You saw Superman, who yeah, saw Clark Kent grow a beard, and you were like, nope, just, not my Superman.
Maybe I'm just a fan of the Christopher Reeve, you know, the yellow spandex and all that kind of stuff. It's in my childhood and set in stone, and that just kind of ruined it for me.
And it was that bad that you want to have Man of Steel scrub from you? You don't, you're not, not
I just, I'm not knocking it. I mean, it's a blockbuster movie, but it was just for me. There are just too many things in it that just did not make sense.
Okay, what did you get to see? I know Man of Steel obviously didn't set the
maybe
the bar
that that's probably put me off of the whole, probably because I'm more of a Marvel kind of fan, that's kind of put me off of the DC kind of, because I can see they're doing their own kind of version of the whole Marvel kind of.
Of course,
thing.
They're creating the DC universe, yeah.
But.
So did you then see Batman versus Superman?
No.
Okay.
Because
fair
of that
enough
reason.
Well.
Because I heard that is.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly. So it's just that train which is getting worse.
I wouldn't go as far as saying scrubbing DC, you know, scrubbing Batman versus Superman or even Man of Steel. I mean, it had its moments, it had its issues, but it wasn't. Hey, I said I'm a huge Marvel fan.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Wolverine fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Last week we had a conversation. One of the topics that we were talking about were animated films, favorite animated TV
okay
shows. And my number 4 or 5, I think, was X-Men. That introduced me to Wolverine.
Oh, the animated series.
Yes.
Yeah,
and I've
yeah
been
yeah
a fan of Wolverine since 1996, since I watched that TV yeah show. And then the movies came out, you know, with X-Men movies, and Hugh Jackman was amazing as Wolverine in the first three films. And then his first one came out, you know, The Origin.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I was no, I have to go and I have to watch this. I sat there and I watched it. And the opening sequence, fantastic opening sequence. There's this bit where it basically shows him and Sabretooth, played by Liev Schreiber.
Yes. Yeah.
Excellent actor. And the sequence is basically going through the years, both of them immortal, if you will, and they're going through different wars. So you see them fight in Civil War.
Yeah, they're
moves
running through and going through different kind of
exactly
wars and surviving
dissolves
and being killed off, but they don't die.
Exactly. So I'm there and I'm getting pumped up because this is amazing. And that, as soon as that opening sequence goes, it just goes downhill from there. And the bit that just it depressed me
was
so
it
much.
Will I Am?
No. Okay, Will I Am. That was a sign of things going down. He's an amazing musician.
Yeah,
should not
yeah
go on. Should not stand in front of the camera as an actor. The bit where I was in the cinema, right? And I don't care about spoiling this part. There was a bit where, because Wolverine in the X-Men movies, they talk about him having lost his memory, right?
Yes.
So this is X-Men Origins. They have to talk about how he loses his memory. And the way that he loses his memory in this is that he is shot in the head with an adamantium bullet, right? Because adamantium is the metal that
oh,
is filled,
yeah,
you know, it's around his bones, which makes him not nearly indestructible, but that's the metal. So the way they explain that is that it is...
I really want to ask you about Logan as well.
I will come back to that. I need to exercise this part. Okay, so is this bit where I can't remember the name of the general, and it will come to me later on. And he's talking to this nurse, and he's got this gun, and he's got an adamantium. He's got adamantium bullets. Striker. And he says to the nurse, he says, "I'm going to shoot him with this gun made of adamantium bullets." And the woman, the nurse, just a point of exposition, is like, "But he will heal, won't he?" And he turns around and he says, "Straight to camera." He says, "His brain might heal, but his memory won't." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Okay, here's how we talk about this, right? Hey, let's break this down. Your plan is basically to shoot him in the head in hopes that that kills him because it's an adamantium bullet. Failing that, if that doesn't kill him, you're expecting that the bullet will go into his brain and destroy the part of his brain that stores memories. Which means that, which basically you're saying, not just all, because how do you know? This is, you're talking about neurosurgery done with a gun, right? Where you're saying that you're going to shoot him specifically with a bullet, right? Specifically hit him in the part of his brain that will erase, give him retrograde amnesia. So you don't worry about him forming future memories. You're worried about eliminating yourself from his memory banks. Really? And that was the part. I was in the cinema. I just said, "Nope, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done with this." I've never walked out of a cinema. I got up. I walked out. The friends I was there with, they were like, "Where are you going?" I'm like, "I'm done. This is me." I walked out of the cinema.
Oh my goodness!
And then I found out about the second one, and I was like, "Okay, I was very reluctant." I went and I watched it. I liked the second one. The second one kind of brought me back.
Yeah.
And the third one, you talked about Logan. And I was like, okay, that made me feel
a little
better.
It felt like it redeemed.
Oh, Logan is fantastic.
Yeah.
Logan restored my faith in the Wolverine franchise. But still,
I'm so glad I missed that one that you were talking about.
I think even if you watch Logan in itself, you haven't seen the previous films, it's still, you can see it as a standalone because it's that good. And I think they took time to really invest. This is kind of like swan song and really look at the kind of history and properly kind of give him a send-off.
Absolutely.
Particularly for Hugh Jackman, who's had over like,
15 years playing the character, yep.
Yeah.
I'll just say that one movie was the one blip in the X-Men. And again, I'll just apologize because I thought I had exercised that particular feeling from my system. Apparently I haven't. So we'll not talk about that again for the rest of the day, shall we? You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
Today we've got Edward Day-Day with us, a film producer from Vidi.
It's all right. We always get that all the time.
Okay, so it's
Veni Vidi.
Veni Vidi. Veni Vidi. I always want to go Veni Vidi.
I came, I saw in Latin.
Yeah, exactly, that's it.
I always want to go Veni Vidi.
Sorry, asterisk.
But that's the thing. I always want to go Veni Vidi Vici.
Yes.
And my brain is, I'm trying, my, I know, I'm talking about my brain as someone completely different from me, which I think it is. I try to stop myself, and that's why I always get that mixed
up.
Excellent. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, pleasure.
Coming up later on the show, we're going to be talking about our UK box office top five. We're going to be talking about our film and TV discussion, which today is going to be TV box sets. I'll have the setting for us just before we do that. We'll also give our Netflix, Amazon, and whatever you watch your TV shows on recommendations today. If you want to send us a message, feel free to send us a message on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @STB_ResonanceFM, or just send us a message on Facebook, which is @Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. But before that, let's have some film and TV news, shall we?
Well, the first news story that we've got this week, and it's really quite a big thing this week, is the BFI London Film Festival is coming into town this week. It's starting tomorrow, and it's going on until next Sunday. Yeah. And there's some really amazing programming in the London Film Festival. I've had the brochure, and I've been sort of poring over it for the last few weeks. And so tomorrow it's starting with Andy Serkis's new film, Breathe, starring Andrew Garfield and Claire Foy. Everyone's very excited about that. It's the opening night gala, and it's closing with something I would really love to see if I'd been able to get the ticket, which is Martin McDonagh's new film, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Oh, I saw a trailer for that. Yeah, that's got Frances McDormand in it, right?
Yeah,
Frances McDormand.
Love her.
Does it have Woody Harrelson in it?
Yes, it does.
Yes,
yep.
He's a
and
sheriff.
And Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell,
yes. And Peter Dinklage.
Yes, yes. To be honest, you've got Peter Dinklage, you've got Sam Rockwell. I don't think Sam Rockwell can do anyway. He does no wrong for me. I saw the trailer for that about 6 months ago. Didn't know it was at BFI. I would have gone to go see it, but I'll wait for it to come out. There were some others that I looked at. We reached out to BFI because navigating the BFI website is a little tricky.
Well, there's just so many films on there. It's like
a
treasure trove.
Yeah. So we sent a message to BFI on Twitter, and they were very helpful. Within hours, they just responded back to us and said, "Yeah, if you want to see what's on or where it's on, just go online to what's on." bfi.org.uk/LFF/online, and you can get to see which movies are on, when they're on, etc.
And there's still lots of tickets left for some of the quite exciting things. My eye was sort of caught by a new film by Dee Reese called Mudbound, about drama about two cotton picking families in the American South. Dee Reese is the director of the Bessie Smith biopic that came out a couple of years ago, and I really, really enjoyed that. So there's a screening of that next Monday morning, I think. So might be taking a few hours off work to
don't
to
say
go
that.
And
you don't know
indulge
listening.
In that.
You just you. I feel
all
you're
above
coming,
board. All
I,
above board.
I feel you're coming. You're coming down with a cough or something. At that that's how you coach that, right? There's a movie I'm looking forward to. I need to check to see when it's on, and I'm going to get a ticket if I can get a ticket to go see it. It's The Lovers. This has Tracy Letts, Deborah Winger, Aidan Gillen, and it's written and directed by Azazel Jacobs. It's a comedy. It's about a couple in their 50s. They've been together since God knows when. They're both having affairs with other people. And you see in the trailer, you see them sort of both simultaneously with the people they're having affairs with. They're telling their partners, or their supposed partners, that they're going to break up with their wife. The wife is saying to her lover, "Don't worry, this weekend I'm going to break up with my husband, and we've set the date when we're going to do it." The husband is telling his girlfriend, "Don't worry, this weekend I'm going to break up with my wife," and so on. And that weekend where they're supposed to do it, you see both of them just turn around, just in the middle of the night, just turn around and then wake up and they're just kissing each other. And then they freak out and sort of rekindle a relationship that then the way it's then framed is they are cheating on their on the people they're having affairs with their partner.
Oh, okay.
So, and I that trailer alone got me hooked, and I was like, it's so witty. And the actors as well, Tracy Letts, I've watched him in a number of things. Deborah Winger as well. I mean, everyone remembers Deborah Winger from Officer and a Gentleman. And Aidan Gillen. And there's one person out there, Michael O'Mara, who does not like Aidan Gillen.
Aidan Gillen.
How could he?
Michael,
little finger from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
He's amazing actor.
In his defense, Aidan Gillen plays characters that are sleazy, I guess.
But
his niche.
But that's how talented he is, because he makes you really, really hate or kind of despise the characters that he plays, because he's so invested and so deep within it. It's just kind of like,
absolutely.
Wasn't he one of the dodgy politicians in The Wire?
That was where you first saw him. Yeah, he's amazing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I hate him.
Oh, no.
I think he's all right. It's Michael that hates him. Michael's not here to defend himself. Shame on him, but it's fine.
And, I mean, as well as the American movies, there's loads of world movies as well. Some of the big things that are coming out, like
Takashi Miike's 100th feature now, Blade of the Immortal.
Oh, yes.
That's definitely something I want to be catching, and there are still some tickets left for that, so
okay, perfect.
I'll definitely be along there next week. Guillermo del Toro's new film, The Shape of Water.
The Shape of Water, yeah.
That's long sold out, but perhaps if we queue up early enough, we'll
that has Michael Shannon
get lucky.
In it.
Oh, Michael Shannon. Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, just basically, if you can go on the BFI website, find out how you can go and see, how you can get tickets to go and see the shows that you want to see, the movies you want to see, or if you are unable to catch it, the festival is on from the 4th to the 15th. If you miss them, unfortunately, you have to wait probably about 6 months, and then you go to your local Cineplex to go and watch whatever
probably.
Comes out.
And there's if you're sort of strapped for cash, there's quite a lot of help on the BFI website in curated selections. They're sort of moving people towards some of the perhaps less heard about films by doing a special offer of 3 films for £30. It's called the Discover Pass. And it's where I go to have my film adventures.
Okay.
So this year I'm seeing a film called The White Girl, directed by Christopher Doyle, who did cinematography for lots of Wong Kar Wai films.
Oh.
But this is something he's directing. It's set in the last fishing community of Hong Kong. I think it's going to be beautiful. I'm not sure what else it's going to be, but I'm really looking forward to it.
See, I love it when cinematographers actually go behind the camera, because you know that no matter what, the movie's just going to be beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Wally Pfister going behind, you're deciding to direct, and it's just, it's every scene, every shot is framed perfectly. So, definitely good idea to go watch that. You said, what other ones did you want to see?
Well, there's a documentary which was called, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this right, but something like Asma-ish, about a relationship between two women remembering the troubles around the separation of Pakistan and India. So they're sort of walking in the borderlands. It's the 70th anniversary of the separation this year. And I really signed up to see this film because I want to know more about that conflict.
Okay.
And it's something I often do with documentaries in film festivals. I find something I want to know more about, and then I go and see it almost regardless of who's made it, okay, or who's in it, or even what people have said about it.
So you say Asma-ish?
Yes.
Okay. We'll get clarification later on. We can put
a list of everything we have described.
Yeah, we'll put it out on Twitter and on Facebook. And if you feel that Laura has butchered the pronunciation of that name, please send us the phonetic pronunciation of Asma-ish to our Twitter on at @STB_resonance_FM or on Facebook at @ShootTheBreeze. On Resonance FM 104.4 FM. What was the third one?
The third one was a Norwegian road movie. It's about the relationship between a father and a son, called Going West, directed by a up-and-coming director called Henrik Martin Dalsbakken. I have never seen any of his work before. I liked the blurb.
Okay.
I liked the still that there was. I mean, that's really how I go through catalogues. If I'm going for an adventure, I'll just read the blurb and sign up to see the movie.
It has to catch you, right? It's a few words just to catch you. If it doesn't grab you, then there's no point you watch it, because there are tons of other movies out there that you'd want to go watch. And so you have to those three lines have to have enough impact to be able to pull you in, to make you interested in the characters, the story that needs to be told.
Absolutely. That one didn't even have a trailer.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a leap of faith, but I really like having them. I wonder how our listeners decide to see things that they've never heard of before and that there isn't very much information about. It's really interesting to me how different people make their decisions.
Ed, let me throw this one to you. As a film producer, what do you look at when the films that you make? What do you sort of pitch out there to grab an audience?
I think it's lots of things, but I think if it is kind of the synopsis, I think that's a main draw, and kind of it's changed over the years, but I think as well, because you have instant kind of reviews now with social media, the internet has changed a lot of things. So back in the day, you'd have kind of like the gala presentation of a film. You have kind of the stars and the actors of the crew have their own screening, and then you'd have the press screening, and that's where you get the reviews. But now people have particularly if they see a film, they will go on Twitter, they'll have their own kind of review about it. So you have that as an area where things are kind of put out, as well as kind of like stuff about what's happened behind the set and just in terms of who is in the cast within the film as well.
Yeah.
So there's different... It depends on the film. It depends on the film. It depends on who's cast and the director as well. There's so many different elements, I think, and it also depends on your taste, really, mm-hmm. because you might prefer to see a crime revenge drama, whereas somebody else would want to seek out a love story.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's good in a way because now there's lots of kind of so many kind of like subgenres and films that are being produced and made. But there's still that kind of very clear divide between the blockbusters and then the indie films where I think people can tell now really very well what they're getting. And I think there's a lot of kind of like people are very more discerned about what they want. They know exactly what they want to see.
So what sort of genre do Vinny Vidi come out with?
We've kind of produced lots of shorts over kind of 4 or 5 years, and we've been working on that as well as kind of developing different films. And I think for us, it's not that we really seek out kind of it has to be mm-hmm. this particular genre or this kind of type of film. It's all about the script. If it's something that kind of grabs us, has an interesting story, something that is just different or has a unique spin to it, or just anything that for us speaks to us or kind of just grabs our attention, then we spend time looking at that and taking it further.
Okay. Now here's a question. I'm not going to ask you what's your favorite genre because that changes depending on your mood, depending on your experiences within that particular day. But right now, as you're sitting in this room, if you were to say this is a genre that I want to work on right now, what's the one that immediately springs to mind?
I think probably noir or neo-noir, I think because of the whole Blade Runner thing, and I think that's just reminded me of stuff that I used to watch as a child and all that kind of like films that have that kind of element, and I think it's coming back again anyway.
Okay.
But I mean for me it's just I don't really have like a set kind of like I think probably noir and crime kind of stuff appeals, and then there's also kind of comedy and different stuff as well that appeals to me. But I think because of the stuff that we've worked on and having that experience, I think I'm quite open because it's you can't kind of set yourself in one kind of lane
of course.
So I'm
you have to provide variety to be able to get more different people of different. I mean, I know there are certain people who like to stick to their own. They find one within genre and they stick within that swim lane and that's what all they focus on.
I like the word the use of swim lane.
Yeah, that's pretty much it's either that or road, and I want to go with something different. So, I've seen some of your work. I've worked with you for a number of years now, and I know that your appetites are quite diverse. That sounds weird, but you know what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the company. I mean, it's been going for about 8 years now, and we started primarily in theatre mm-hmm. because my background is I trained as an actor, went to Lambda, and then kind of did acting, and then my good friend Natalie Andown, so it's both of us. Natalie's the artist director, and there's myself as the producer.
Hi, Natalie, if you're listening.
Yes, she's on holiday now. She might be listening up in the Hebrides.
She was supposed to be here, but she's having a better time.
She's having a lovely time.
Yeah.
But she particularly had, she worked in the West End and had lots of kind of ideas for doing her own work and creating stuff, and that's how it kind of started. And then we kind of moved more into film about a couple of years ago.
What inspired that jump?
I think because we both love film and we always wanted to do shorts, and through the theatre work that we did, we started off doing kind of with Nat creating these Shakespeare shorts, and from there it progressed because I think we just found as much as we both love theatre, there's so much you can do, and the ideas that we had to kind of present, we thought film is a really good medium to start kind of taking those ideas that we had in theatre, exploring it more. And from there, it just kind of went further into kind of developing and doing read-throughs and helping other directors and writers that we've worked with over the years to kind of help craft their work and develop stuff with them. So for me, it's been great because it's kind of seeing the other side of the coin and seeing how things are made and produced and developed from literally from the idea all the way through to production and distribution. So,
is there any way any of the listeners can see any of your previous work?
Yeah, so we've got our website, so you can go on to venivdfilm.com or on our Facebook or our Twitter pages as well. So if you just type in Google Venivdfilm, I know sometimes it's confused, but I think it's kind of the name itself is kind of has that ring to it. So I think that's what Natalie kind of came up with it to kind of draw people in. But
so that's V E N I.
So V E N I.
V I D.
That
I.
Yes.
Films or just
film.
Film. So V E N I V I D I film.com.
Yes.
Okay. So go on there, go onto the website, have a look at Vinny VD Films Productions.
I mean, yeah, so we've got kind of like all of the Shakespeare shorts that Natalie directed and some, I'm in one of them as well, and some of our upcoming work as well. But we kind of use that as a portal to put our work, and also we've got kind of other stuff that we're developing, and that's kind of writing her stuff as well. So yeah, it's good because it's weird in a way because we kind of at the same time doing producing, we also kind of go back to our kind of fields in a way because Natalie went to Edinburgh and she directed a sellout show.
Okay.
And then she directed a new writing piece called The Giant Killers. I was trying to remember the Giant Killers, which is about football and about this a period play set in this small working kind of northern town and about which is based on a real true life story about this kind of group of kind of working class people that try and take on the elite and how they form their own football team together. And it was really kind of put together by Nat and the actors as an ensemble. So yeah, they took it to Edinburgh and had like an amazing run. So yeah, so she is now coming off from that, and yeah, we're coming back into the swing of things. I think it's kind of like that whole summer thing where we've been doing stuff and then now coming into the autumn ready to get back into work again. So yeah, it's good.
Well, that's excellent. Okay, you've been listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko
and Laura Sampson.
That was Edward Dede. You're going to be with us for the rest of the day because I need to find out your TV box sets choices, which we'll go into. So that's coming up later on. We're going to talk about TV box sets to be stuck with on a deserted island. We're also going to do the UK top 5 and also do Netflix and Amazon recommendations. We do have one special treat, which is to break up some of the talking. We're going to have a nice little audio sort of treat for you, which is Man of Constant Sorrow from my favorite movie, O Brother, Where Art Thou?
I think it might be mine too.
In constant sorrow I may lay.
my face you never will see no more. But there is one promise that is given. I'll meet you on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
That was the Soggy Bottom Boys with I Am a Man of Constant Sorrow from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
That, I've seen trouble that song all gives
me, that song gives me the feels. It gives me the feels. Oof. Okay. While we were listening to that song, Michael Maria tweeted in because we mentioned earlier on the show Aidan Gillen being his favorite actor of all time. He tweeted in saying, "Actually, I said that every character Aidan Gillen plays comes across as slimy, not sleazy. I apologize, Michael. You said slimy, not sleazy, even when they're not." And his accent work is shocking. So, not my words, Michael and Mario's words. you're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus Iacco.
And I am Laura Sampson.
With us today is Ed Dede from Vinny.
You were right the first time.
I was right the first time. You're going to kill me.
Vinny Vidi film.
Okay, so what we're going to do now is we're going to look at the UK box office top five. Not top 10, but top five. We'll start with number five, which is... Sorry, I've got my notes here. Number five, Flatliners. Now, the Flatliners is a remake of...
It's the original one with Kevin Bacon, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got Kevin Bacon, Keith Sutherland, it's got Julia Roberts, and it's got Oliver Platt. But that is the 80s film.
Did you love that film?
It was all right. It was okay. It was not their best work, as far as I was concerned. But that's not the film that's number five. The number five film is Flatliners. It's a remake of that particular film, which has, I don't think, any of those characters in it.
And why do we think it's got to number five? Do you think people are just curious, or do you think people think it's actually good?
It's a debut, right? So it's basically, it's a remake, right? And this is the thing.
So it's a remake of the original film, or a sequel?
It's not a sequel. It's just a remake. It's got Ellen Page in it. So it's got a good cast list in it as well, right? So I wanted to go see this weekend so I can come talk about it on the show. But I instead of seeing it, I figured, let me listen to the reviews first. Mm. And the reviews are horrible.
They really are. I don't think I've seen reviews with this much sort of bile in them. Clearly written by people who
like the
are
original.
Comparing fans it to the original.
It's got a good cast list in there. It's got Ellen Page. It's got Diego Luna. It's got Nina Dobrev from
Vampire Diaries.
Vampire Diaries, exactly. It does have Kiefer Sutherland who makes a return. So I guess it's a sequel. In a sense, but it's more along the lines of the same of a remake. I am still going to go see it just so I can see what it is. I like Ellen Page and Diego Luna as well. I like those two. I trust their work, but we'll check it out, see what it's like.
And this has just come in over the past weekend, hasn't it? It came out last Friday.
Yes. Right. Number four is Goodbye, Christopher Robin.
Another new one.
Yes. Ah. This one has Domhnall Gleeson and Margot Robbie, and they're fantastic together. Those two, I think, can do anything.
Yeah.
What was the name of that other film that they were in together? He was a time traveling man who met her in lots of different parts of her life, and he kind of kept on going back in time a little bit.
It's not Margot Robbie. You're thinking of the Richard Curtis film.
It has the actress who's been in so many different things.
It's got Rachel McAdams in it.
That's Rachel McAdams.
And it's got Bill Nighy in it. The name escapes me.
Just in Time? No, not Just in Time.
It'll come to me. I haven't seen that film. I do know about the film.
About Time.
I've heard great things about that particular film. I almost saw it. Rachel McAdams, not Margot Robbie. But
sorry.
No, it's okay. But yeah, so it's in Goodbye, Christopher Robin, it's basically about the writer of
Winnie
the Pooh books. Yeah, and Domhnall Gleeson, he's so versatile. He's a very versatile actor. Mm. He's basically, I was going to make this joke, he's the white Donald Glover, but it's last week he was in American Made with Tom Cruise.
Was he?
Yeah, he's an American Made with Tom Cruise. The week before, there was another movie. And then there's Ex Machina, which I saw last weekend, which is fantastic.
He's fantastic in that.
It's exactly. So easy to forget that it's him, though. Somehow, it's like there's a tall, thin, really good actor in that movie. Oh, they're all Donald Gleeson.
That's a mark of a good actor. It depends on what you define a good actor as being, though. I mean, I was having a conversation with Michael Amari the other day about Idris Elba. Would you consider Idris Elba a good actor or a great actor, or would you feel that he actually has one role that he plays very well, and then you can define him as being a great actor because he does that one particular role exceptionally? Or look at Ed Norton, for example. Ed Norton is the same as Donald Glover. Donald Glover actually, yes, and Domhnall Gleeson. You can throw him into any role, and he's the Hulk or Bruce Banner in one movie, and he turns around and his first movie that he's in, that courtroom drama where he plays a character who switches personalities to cover up a crime that he's committed. Those are actors who are extremely versatile. As an actor yourself, what is your definition of great acting? Is it someone who can be versatile, or someone who can pick a particular style and stick to it and do that convincingly?
I think for me, it's just that I forget that whoever the actor is and they are the character, that they just become the character. Mm-hmm. I think you forget, because it's interesting, because you have people like what you're saying where, as much as he's a brilliant actor, George Clooney, because of that star system, you just think George Clooney is so-and-so.
You could say the same thing about Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Where it becomes a brand rather than an actor.
Because it gets to a point where it's that star vehicle. It becomes different, where you have actors which, you know, I admire that kind of absorb themselves so much into the part that they just disappear in a sense, mm-hmm. and just become it. Like, you know, Tom Hardy does that. He's very kind of involved in his parts, and Cate Blanchett as well. They're different actors. Chiwetel Ejiofor. There's a spectrum of actors, and they all have a different kind of way of acting and kind of approaching a part, which is brilliant, because it just adds so many flavors for people to be interested in, kind mm-hmm. of like taking in their kind of their work, essentially.
Well, the reason why we're talking about this is because Domhnall Gleeson, who's in Goodbye, Christopher Robin, that was number 4 in the UK top 5 box office. Number 3, speaking about great acting, Victoria and Abdul, Judi Dench, Eddie Izzard. You're talking about colossal. I mean, Eddie Izzard, you wouldn't really class him as a great actor, but he's phenomenal. He's the same. If you know Eddie Izzard's work, every time you see him pop up, you think Eddie Izzard, and it's hard to separate the character he's playing.
But
from,
not in Victoria and Abdul.
Really, you thought he was great, or you thought he wasn't?
I forgot it was him.
Good.
I completely forgot it was him, and it's impossible to forget Judi Dench. It's completely impossible. It doesn't stop her from being brilliant.
I'm sorry, Laura. I think Ed might disagree with you.
No, I was agreeing. Oh, okay. I was saying I should have finished the sentence, but yeah.
Because you went.
I know, that was kind of like, well, you know, but it was actually for me to say yes, because it's just Judi Dench.
Just go, Judi Dench is overrated.
No way.
It's okay, Ed. It's a safe space. You can
I'll probably
say
be
Dench's.
One in a million person in like... in the whole world to kind of say Judi Dench is... There are probably people out there that just absolutely think Judi Dench is not
probably,
Judi Dench.
But I will come to that particular... those people in a second. But Laura, you were saying about Eddie Izzard was phenomenal in it, right?
Well, I'm not sure I'd go that far.
Okay, let's backtrack a bit.
Because I'm not sure I'd go...
He was so-so.
Well, I'm not sure I would go as far as to be that effusive about this particular film. I thought there were some great performances in it, and it was very entertaining. I had no problem sitting in the cinema for the entire time. It was beautiful. The costumes were wonderful. Judi Dench was Judi Dench. But the story was just a little bit thin. There were all of these great actors riding on this story that just wasn't meaty enough for all the talent that was there.
Sure.
And I just wish that there'd been something else that could have been brought into it. I felt like there was something missing.
Like
from
a gunfight or a transformer.
Perhaps not quite going that far, but just perhaps one more subplot. It was really fairly simple, you know, a friendship develops and there are lots of people who don't like it. And then those people eventually win.
I think you'll see more of that when Michael Bay and Timur Bekmambetov remake the movie in 3 years' time. They'll put Transformers and the Ninja Turtles and they'll basically fight against Queen Victoria. And I don't know. I'm just saying.
I think there are lots of the same types of stories in different genres, and a lot more could have been made of a subplot with the wife of the Abdul character.
Sure.
That was quite funny, but it never really
got it never went wings. Anywhere. Okay.
So it was entertaining. I liked it, but next.
Well, it's at number three this week.
It
this
is.
Weekend.
There's
it was number
nothing
three.
Wrong with it at all. Yeah, except it's, that it's a bit.
Well, it's hanging on in there.
I mean, it's got Stephen Frears as director and Judi Dench. I mean, it's going to be obviously box office for a certain type of audience. So
that's true. The ones who made the Great Marigold Hotel,
exactly.
Exotic Marigold Hotel. I can barely speak today. I shouldn't be on the radio. They kept that in the top spot for quite a while. I guess they're probably doing the same thing.
People who are interested in the history as well.
That's true.
It's a part of Victorian history that I certainly didn't know much about, and neither did quite a lot of other people until fairly recently when the diaries of Abdul were released.
Okay.
So it's historically interesting, sort of a jumping off point for people who are interested in that side of things as well.
But you think the story itself was thin on the ground?
As a film, yes.
Okay,
sorry, Victorian Abdul.
Well, number two, It. Have any of you seen It yet? I have. It is.
I'm too scared.
Not that I'm scared. It's weird. I haven't seen it yet.
Yep.
But I've heard the reviews and...
You should. Now, the point I was going to make about when you said that there's some one in a million person out there who says Judi Dench is underrated. What I'm finding now about It, this one that's out, is you now have those critics who are trying to be contrarian and are coming out and saying, oh no, It is not as great as everyone says it is. Because it's broken box office records. It's like it's beaten Deadpool for highest grossing in the States. It's made 29 million in the UK alone. It's, I think, 2 weeks in box office top 10. And now you're having those people stepping out the woodwork and saying, no, it's not as scary as it is. It is the best horror movie I've seen this year. Here's what, and I've said this the last 3 weeks, the reason why I consider it the best horror movie I've seen this year is because it is actual horror, as opposed to the
gore fest.
With the exception, you know, yeah, exactly. It's not gory in that regards. It is not jump scares. It's not filled with jump scares, because that's what horror, it seems horror for the last 10 years, that's what it is. It's basically someone plays something really loud, jumps out at you. That's not you being scared. That's a fight or flight response that you're getting. It's not horror. This is creepy. That's what it does. The music, the setting. I was watching it. While I was watching it, there were certain moments where something is about to happen. You know something is about to happen. And you're expecting, because I'm conditioned with all the jump scares, I'm conditioned to expect something to jump out at you. And it doesn't do that. It's the creepiest things. You see what's coming. And you're like, get out of the room. Just get out of the room. And there's this one sequence in particular, which I'm not going to spoil it, but it's with it's the lead actress in it. I can't remember her name. I'll write her name down later on and I'll tweet it out. She is phenomenal in the film. There's a scene, I'm not going to talk about what happens, but there is a bit in it. It happens in a bathroom and it's, get out of the house. Just get out of the house. And she overcomes one thing and you're like, whew. And then something else happens straight after and you're like, get out of the house.
Oh my goodness.
It is very well done.
I've forgotten his name. Bill Skarsgård.
Bill Skarsgård is excellent.
In comparison to Tim Curry's version of Pennywise.
Two different people. Tim Curry's Pennywise was awesome. It's the same thing. Is the same kind of comparison can be made where you say Jack Nicholson's Joker and Heath Ledger's Joker. It's the same. Is the same sort of comparison. They are two different Pennywise.
Yeah.
Right. Playing the same character, but two different people. But Bill Skarsgård, amazing as Pennywise. He is creepy. He is scary. It's great. The last time I talked about it, about 2 weeks ago, I said there was an actor in it, and one of the reasons why I liked it was because I'm not distracted. You said one thing: when you're watching an actor, you're thinking, "Well, that's George Clooney," and they filled it with no-named actors, and I really liked that. Except for one kid that I thought I recognized him from somewhere. And in the same episode we were talking about, we said, oh, show I liked was Stranger Things. The actor from Stranger Things, because it has that sort of feel. And that was number two. So number one is Kingsman. Kingsman and the Golden Circle.
And what did you think of that?
I liked Kingsman and the Golden Circle. It's action-packed. It's great acting. Taron Egerton, Mark Strong. Wow, how did I forget his name? Colin Firth returns. That's not a spoiler. He's in the adverts. Channing Tatum, Jeff Bridges, Julianne Moore.
Halle
Berry's in it as well. They're all very, very, very good. It's very good action. Popcorn, it's a fantastic movie. Definitely go see it. There's a reason why it's number one. So it's very good. So that was the UK box office top five. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
With us today, Edward Dede, film producer from Vinny VD Films. Did I get it? Yay! I got it! Yay.
Round of applause!
Yay! Oh, it doesn't take much to please me. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to jump into our film and TV discussion today, which is about TV box sets. And I'll explain further after this music interlude. So picture this scenario. You've been convicted of a crime so heinous that your sentence is that you are to spend the rest of your days on Earth on a deserted island that is obviously wired for electricity. And your only luxury is that you need to pick five TV box sets that you get to spend while on this desert island. So TV box sets that you have with you on a deserted island. Now, we had someone who sent us their top five, didn't they?
We had several. And first, I mean, Jennifer from New York really loved Community.
Oh, yes.
Oh, good, yeah.
Doctor Who, particularly Series 6, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
I'm sorry, Karen.
Northern Exposure.
I don't judge. I'm not judging.
And 30 Rock with honorable mentions for La Femme Nikita and Sailor Moon.
Sailor Moon. That was pretty good. Did anyone else
see? Diverse there.
And we had Richard from Trinidad, whose answer I'm just getting up now. If we could.
So while you pull that up, Ed, what's your number five and your number four?
My number five would be, because I mentioned this to you and I kind of swapped it around and I'm now playing.
Okay.
I'll mention both of them. One of them would be Erie, Indiana, which people remember from, I think, the late 90s.
Yep.
Which is it's almost like The X-Files, but set in this kind of weird backwater village.
Yep.
And they're kind of like this kid who's trying to solve all these kind of weird, mysterious things
Spooky
going on.
Spooky happenings, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a really good series. And Friends, I think.
Friends.
Because if I'm stuck on an island, I could just... And, you know, obviously, if on the island had a TV and a DVD player...
You've got your friends with you.
Yeah, exactly. And there's just... It's just a series you can, like, everyone knows, you can just go back to and just, you know, watch, even be doing something else and have that on in the background and you still know what's going on.
Absolutely. Laura, do you have your number five and your number four?
I do indeed. My number five is... Fringe.
Oh.
J.J. Abrams' series after Lost.
That has Joshua Jackson in it.
Joshua Jackson.
He was my favourite member of the Dawson's Creek family. So.
And Dawson's Creek is one of my honourable mentions. I decided it would be too embarrassing to put it as one of my actual five.
It's not embarrassing. I have a friend who was in love. His name is... I have a friend who was Chris Williams. If you're out there, Chris Williams, message us on STB... underscore Resonance FM on Twitter. He loved what's her name, the Dawson's girlfriend on that show.
The
one that got married to Tom Cruise, the actress that got married to Tom Cruise.
Oh, Katie Holmes.
Yeah, he was so in love with Katie Holmes that basically when the news broke out that she got married to Tom Cruise, he actually kind of felt real bad because he thought he had a shot with her.
Well,
you still have a shot with her, dude. So wherever you are, come find me. We'll find her together.
This might be my cowardly substitute for Dawson's Creek, but I'm going to go with Fringe because I thought it was a really classy sci-fi. Something different happened in every episode, and the main character was a female FBI agent, and there were just loads of... There was a mad scientist, mm-hmm. there was a police officer who turned into...
Don't spoil it. She just like, and it was a sled. What? No, you don't tell us what happened at the end.
There were five series, and I would be happy to watch them.
So that was your number five?
Yeah, that's my number five. Now, my number four is Spooks, because of the most outrageous cliffhangers at the end of every series. Do you remember when we didn't have Netflix or Amazon Prime and we had to wait?
Wait a week,
Yeah.
I respect both choices, Fringe and Spooks. I was a
Matthew
huge
McFadden,
fan.
Matthew McFadden, Keely Hawes, David Oyelowo.
Oh, yes.
It's original back then,
Those were my Spooks. So that's how I look at it, right? Because then they recycled and they brought in Richard Armitage and they brought in... What was the other guy? I can't remember. His name's escaped me. But they brought in other people. But no, the Matthew McFadden, Keely Hawes, and David Oyelowo. Oyelowo, they're my Spooks. They're the ones that I have, and I keep them as that. My number five, Flight of the Conchords.
Oh,
Jermaine Clement, Brett McKenzie, Rhys Darby. It's just the music is fantastic. They're a folk band, two of them folk band from New Zealand, moved to New York to try and make it big. Every episode has at least two songs. They have Business Time. They have a part-time model. It's just amazing songs. They have two seasons. I've watched them on repeat. Every now and again, whenever I'm feeling down, I just go flick on one of their tunes, listen to it. A Kiss is Not a Contract. It's awesome songs that they have. My number two, similar to Friends, something that was running along the same time as Friends, Frasier.
Oh,
Frasier.
Yes.
I would take Frasier with me because...
I probably would steal that off you and have that on my list as well.
There you go. There are 263 episodes of Frasier. I've watched all of them at least twice. This show was so great. It was a spin-off from Cheers back in the early 80s, or late 80s rather. It has an amazing cast. So Frasier is my number four. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson. Oh. And we are talking about our favourite TV box sets. We're on to number three and number two now.
Yeah, so Ed, do you want to give us your number three and two?
My number three and two would be Westworld and True Blood.
Nice.
Yeah, I just... Westworld, obviously, it's the first season has come on air and has been amazing. And it's just to take something which was, at the time... this kind of remake of an old kind of film by the director writer of Jurassic Park, and mm-hmm. he had this other idea of this kind of theme park with robots, and just the way they've kind of explored so many themes, and it just has this kind of edge to it. But and the acting, like Anthony Hopkins, is amazing in it. So yeah, I would have that and True Blood, because despite the sex and the violence, it just has...
What do you mean, despite the sex and the violence? You're on an island by yourself. The sex and violence are going to... They're going to keep
turning very
you.
Blue.
I'm just saying.
I think it's just the southern charm of it as well. And I think that... I mean, people said it kind of went a bit wayward. I think once the showrunner, he left, you could see it kind of dip. But I think the first couple of seasons, it's just the writing, the sense of kind of like you'd have an episode and end on a cliffhanger had that kind of like scary horror element. So yeah, definitely.
I agree. I was with that show for the first two seasons. I watched the entire thing, but the first two seasons were the best. Laura, what's your number three and number two?
My number three and my number two are both HBO series. One is fairly early. It's Sex and the City. arguably the thing that sort of made HBO yes. what it is. And my number two is Game of Thrones, which is HBO what it is.
Of course. you're top and tail there. That's pretty cool.
I love both of those series, and I have watched every episode of each of them at least once, probably more like three times, and I would be happy to do it another three.
I'll accept both choices. I'm not going to judge any of you on any of your choices, but absolutely, Sex and the City. I love that
There's
show.
Some great writing in that.
Yeah, I hated the movies, great. but the shows themselves, the shows were fantastic. The movies, not so
much. Well, I think you're in luck. They said they're not going to do another one.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, that was this week, wasn't it? Where it was finally decided that there would be no more Sex and the City movies because Kim Cattrall didn't want there to be.
That is good news.
Thank you, Kim.
And Game of Thrones, there's not much that can be said about Game of Thrones that hasn't already been said. It's a great show.
We could see it for hours talking about that show.
Absolutely. For me, my number three is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The only thing one line I'd say about it is just a song, "Dear Man, fighter of the night, man, ruler of the sun." Go and watch the series and you will see exactly what I'm talking about. If you are not singing that song on your way to work or wherever it is you're going, then you don't have a soul. My number two is The Wire, HBO. Five seasons. I've watched the five seasons three times. I just go back, I rewatch it again. It introduced the world to Idris Elba. Not saying that's where he started. He had some stuff before that, but that was where everyone knew him from that show. It's an amazing show, The Wire.
Oh my God, I love that show. If you hadn't picked it, I would definitely have picked it.
Absolutely. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko.
And Laura Sampson.
With us is Edward Day-Day. We're talking about our top five TV box sets that we would take with us to a deserted island. What's your number one, Ed?
Oh, this was tough, but I think because it was between two.
Okay.
The first one is Silicon Valley.
Oh, okay.
I love. I think it's now getting a bit more kind of attention, but I love the writing in it, the characters. It's just brilliant. And my top would be Breaking Bad.
Oh,
just
yes.
Amazing.
You know what? Both very good choices. Laura, what are yours?
My number one.
Yes.
My number one is...
You can have two number ones if you want.
I can have two number ones?
You can have two number ones.
Oh my gosh, I can have two number ones?
Yes.
Well, Breaking Bad would be one of them, actually.
Yeah.
Treme. HBO. We love HBO on this show. Yeah.
From the creators of The Wire.
Five series from the creators of The Wire. Lots of the same cast and John Goodman and lots of music. Oh. I loved it.
Absolutely. My number one, I'm only having one number one because there's only one number one. It's Joss Whedon's Firefly.
Oh.
14 episodes of pure gold. I've watched that show over and over again. If you don't think that it's my favorite show, every episode of this show starts with a scene, starts with a clip from one of the episodes from Firefly. That's Malcolm Reynolds and Zoe talking about just going to rescue some of their team members. Go and watch Firefly if you haven't seen it. Okay.
Oh, can I just quickly, before we end, thank Richard from Trinidad, who loved The West Wing, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, The Mythbusters, Doctor Who, and Masterpiece. And Sam from North London, who liked Treme, Star Trek, the original series, The Prisoner, Samurai Jack, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which I might have picked as well.
Good choices.
You've got some very, very, very good taste, listeners. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up now with Netflix or Amazon recommendation. Ed, do you have any Netflix recommendations or Amazon recommendations? Or anything that's going to be on TV that's coming out that you want to recommend?
There's one which is coming out on Netflix, which is called Sabara, if I'm saying it correctly, which is a Italian crime mafia drama, kind of a mix of the mafia and politics and religion. It's going to be really good. So,
what about yourself, Laura?
Oh, fantastic. I am looking forward to seeing Eyes Wide Shut again, which is coming out on Netflix again this month.
Well, I'm going to recommend Gifted on Fox. You've been listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus Acko
and Laura Sampson
on Resonance 104.4 FM.
See you next week.